147 million. These statistics, I'm sure, keeps on changing in 2010. So we have 94 million feet to look after. I see not as a patient, but every patient has 2 feet. And there will be 13.5 million feet we will develop ulcer. And there will be approximately 100,000 amputation. So this we have to prevent, and diabetic foot is a major public health problem as of today in India. Why does this happen? There are three reasons: neuropathy, vasculopathy, and injury. First two, most of us have not really good control, as Dr. Snehalata said, because we can do only little and try to pursue it. But injury is something which is completely preventable. Because if, even in spite of neuropathy, vasculopathy, if we can prevent injury, then most of the time patient can be mobile with an intact foot. This is an algorithm I think all of us know. I'm just showing you to show that every diabetic patient or majority of them will go through all this. If we manage to keep the skin intact in spite of deformities, ischemia, there is no ulcer. Once the ulcer forms, the disease takes completely different turn and it becomes unmanageable. Now, why do you see so many patients walking? Because whatever has been taught to us for generations, that every infection will have fever, every abscess will have swelling, all this is absent in diabetic patients. And there is a very low level of awareness at every level of healthcare. You require a very high index of suspicion, because these are like iceberg. What you see from outside is a very small 3/4 or 2/3 is hidden inside. You can see these two examples. Small ulcers, see the extent. Similarly, this, and this is what is missed. And that's why most of the patients lose their limbs. And this is a saying which I think all of us should remember. For the one mistake made for not knowing, the 10 mistake made for not looking. Okay, so I think every healthcare provider must look at patients' feet at every visit. Because by the time patients start complaining, it is too late. And this is an unwritten policy across whole Southeast Asia. No complaint, no examination. And that needs to be changed. And we need to catch the neuropathy at an early stage, because this changes the biomechanics. And this is one small tip like this we can give the patient. Feet that sweat, do not ulcer it. It's something which means simply that if the feet stop sweating, the neuropathy has progressed to that extent where it is going to cause break in the skin. Now, how does this, and sorry, this is an injury which is the most dangerous. Apart from other injuries, I would say 90% loss of limb is because of this injury, which is a pressure injury. How does it occur? I think we need to understand basic biomechanics. Instead of going through the text, I will show you the film. See, normal foot has a heel strike. There is a mid stance, and then it goes into propulsion and takes off. And you can see a human foot has a many bones, about 26 bones and 29 joints, but they never rattle because the foot is absolutely stable. And the reason why foot is stable, the structure which holds the foot together and does not allow any bones to slip, is the plantar fascia. Non-enzymatic glycation because of the neuropathy reduces the strength of the plantar fascia and foot becomes unstable. And you can see in like this, the axis of walking is completely stable, and you can see the tendo Achilles does not waver anywhere. So foot is absolutely stable in a normal person. Now you can see a film like this, you take an x-ray, you can see the central heel strike. Now what happens in diabetes? There is no muscle control, there is no sensation, there is no joint position sense. So foot, instead of falling in the center, falls in the pronation. Sometimes it falls into supination. And in the same patient, one foot will fall in a pronation, other foot will fall in a supination. And this is classically described by most of the patients, that if they try to walk faster or turn, they feel wobbly. And if you see the patients of grade 3 neuropathy from behind, you'll find their foot is going this way, and they are wobbling actually. And many of them fall down because of this. And this is uncoordinated walk because of lack of joint position sense, lack of sensory input, and a very poor muscle control in the foot. And you can see this, the medial malleolus is going completely medially as compared to earlier because of hyperpronation. And this is the equation which will decide whether the patient will get ulcer. Pressure is equivalent to force divided by area. Force is a body weight, area is a plantar surface. As the neuropathy extends, instead of a large plantar area, there are multiple small areas, so the pressure for the same body weight increases. Now, this is what happens. The peak plantar pressure at the push-off stage is 600 kilopascals, which is a huge pressure. At that pressure, usually, most of the arteries get obliterated and there is anoxia, ischemia. This is what happens in each and every human being, right from childhood to the death. And there is an instant recovery as soon as the foot goes off the floor. And that is something which is delayed because of neuropathy. So delayed recovery, which will cause anoxia to linger, will cause inflammation, which will cause warmth, erythema and inflammation. Now the simplest thing is very, very important preventive step is that you teach the patient to peel with the back of hand first, third and fifth metatarsal heads. And if they are warmer than rest of the foot at the end of the day, he has reached his stage. It simply means that he is walking unlimited beyond the limit of his foot which it can bear. And the next stage in the physiological cascade is an exudate, which will manifest in form of a blistering breakdown and form ulcer. This is known as a Brand-Colman hypothesis. This is one of the major hypotheses developed by Dr. Paul Brand, why the normal day-to-day walking, unprotected walking can break down the foot. So you have sensory neuropathy. One point here I would like to make, most of the diabetologists and physicians club the neuropathy as a sensory motor neuropathy. But they are two different components, and if you carefully see in many patients, sensory and motor neuropathy don't progress parallelly. And that's what needs to be kept in mind. So there's a loss of sensation which causes inability to feel pressure, and loss of position sense which causes change in the walking pattern and hyperpronation. When motor neuropathy contributes this way, it causes deformity, change in the walking pattern, hyperpronation, and there is an increased ground contact time. The foot remains on the ground for a longer time. See, normally when we walk, if our first metatarsal remains on the ground for even 2 more seconds, we get an uncomfortable sensation. That is lost in diabetes because of a sensory neuropathy and loss of pressure effects. So foot remains on the ground. It is always interesting if you see a grade 3 neuropathy patient standing in a bus, queue for a bus. He will not move his foot. He stands straight. And that's why the pressure goes on increasing. And the parameter which will cause a breakdown usually is the impulse loading. Impulse loading is a pressure multiplied by the contact time. And you see the classical example of this in all our hospitals, whichever may be their star status, in ICUs where diabetic patients are lying in the bed. There is a prolonged contact time but very low pressure because of the bed. But still they get a blister and heel gangrene. And that is because the impulse loading goes on increasing and it causes a pressure effect. And the simplest thing to prevent is to raise the heel above the bed with a simple pillow. And that's why majority of the ulcers are on the first metatarsal, which bears the maximum pressure. And one thing which, simply preventive mechanism is that you measure the movement of the first MTP joint at every follow-up visit. The normal extent of a first MTP joint extension in a standing position is 15 degrees. And if you find it is gradually reducing, that means there is a limited joint mobility which is developing, which will increase the pressure and break down the skin. So this patient then needs a proper footwear. Many times you can find out which is the foot at risk looking at the patient's closed shoes. See, normally when we walk, a normal person, I don't know whether you have noticed, you purchase a new closed shoes. And within 4 or 5 days you get horizontal creases. Why does this happen? Because all MTP joints move at the same time. When one starts moving late, you find that there is a oblique crease like this, which develops. And many times if you are observant, just looking at the patient's closed shoes, you know that he is heading for a problem. And then this is what you get, ulcers like this. Another biomechanical thing is that, many times we do forefoot amputation, all good surgery, reconstruction, give a good footwear, and patient starts walking and he starts developing this ulcer, which keeps on occurring. We give a lot of things and ultimately leads to osteomyelitis. The reason is, foot is a mechanical structure. The fulcrum is formed by the joint, pulley is formed by gastrocnemius soleus. Normally 2/3 of the foot is in front of the fulcrum. When you reduce the length of the foot, make it half, the strength of the pulley is same. The moment patient starts walking, the food goes into plantar flexion and patient is walking on this small point, small area, so the same equation comes into play, pressure equivalent to force divided by area, and all weight bearing is here, and that breaks down. The thing to do is that along with this, you do tendoactivist lengthening, which will reduce the strength of the pulley and save the foot. Then again, heel ulcers never heal. Why do they not heal? Because there is always constant pressure, and heel ulcers are never because of pressure, they are because of a penetration. Now, why does the foot get deformed in diabetes? See, foot is a very most energy efficient machine developed by the God. There is nothing more energy efficient than foot. And normal persons don't develop any corns and calluses unless there is a direct pressure. And that energy efficiency is lost because of a diabetic neuropathy. And you can see, most of the time in India, these x-rays are reported as a normal. If you see clearly, there is a gap between first and second cuneiform. Anatomically, cuneiforms are tightly packed. And if you draw the line between on such an x-ray, first and second metatarsal, allow it to transact by cuboid navicular line. This angle C in podiatry is known as angle of adductus primus. Normally, it is 3 to 5 degrees. As it goes on widening, the foot starts becoming dislocated. And this is the joint, which is the strongest joint in the midfoot, goes get subluxated, and this is a normal load triangle of the foot, and the axis of weight bearing normally is along the second metatarsal, which shifts to the midfoot as the patient keeps on walking, either without footwear or improper footwear in an advancing neuropathy, and then foot breaks down and you get Charcot foot. So the simple precaution of measuring the angle of first MTP joint, giving the patient proper footwear with a medial arch support, encouraging him to wear, can prevent this completely along with glycemic control. And you get this type of a feet which are difficult to save. The one thing which can detect this early is the foot scan, but it's something which is not going to be available everywhere. Now that's why the message I want to give is 85% of diabetic foot ulcers are within out. They are not because something penetrates the foot. It is because of a day-to-day, repetitive, moderate force of routine, unprotected walking as neuropathy advances, and that causes the break in the foot. And diabetic foot ulcer is a mechanical problem. No amount of dressings, antibiotics will heal the ulcer unless you offload the ulcer-bearing area. Coming to the footwear, as Mangal said, this is the simple principle. Footwear should do what foot cannot do. Because foot is falling differently, it is hyperpronating, all this needs to be corrected. This is a basic principle diagram. At the beginning, we can give sports shoes because they have a wide toe box extra depth. As the neuropathy progresses, I think you need to keep on changing the footwear. These are the characteristics of a diabetic footwear, and I think these are simple things which need to be followed. Insole is actually the sole of the diabetic footwear. Unless you have a good insole, whatever may be the type of a footwear, it will not be useful. And these are the basic things. It should be 8 to 10 millimeter thickness. It should have a sure hardness of 25 to 35. Sure hardness is a property of a material to distribute the foot pressure. And there are sure hardness meters, but then every doctor will not have. The simplest thing you can do is take a 1 rupee coin, take the insole which patient is using and press on that for 10 seconds. When you remove the coin, if the mark remains, that means the sure hardness is not correct and the footwear is, the insole is not distributing the pressure. And these are the types of insole. Newer and newer technologically, new materials are coming. I think the important factor here is the cost and availability. And this is of course basic anatomy of a footwear. For a deformed foot, you know, many people give a simple flat insole and then that whatever good surgery is done goes haywire completely. This is a basic principle how a footwear for a deformed foot is made. It's like trying to give a cushion which will prevent the deformity from touching, or it will get cushioned. And as you see, this is a mechanical model, as you put a different type of a springs with a different strength and different width, a space comes where the deformity does not touch the insole. And the objective is, again, they are saying to relieve the pressure to prevent the injury. And these are the materials which are used for total contact orthosis. That's the semi-flexible, this is the rigid. And layer materials, these are middle layer materials, and the bottom needs to be very tough. So usually in India they use cork rubber. This is one way of making it. You ask the patient to stand on that, you get the impression, you pour a plastic, liquid plaster and get a mold and you make a insole like this. Rocker outsole, you give a bend to the outer sole, and that should be proximal to the area which you want to offload. And this is a rocker roller, and this is a rocker. This is known as the apex of rocker. Apex of rocker has to be proximal to the area which needs to be offloaded. This is one study which showed that, you know, 60% rocker reduces the pressure very much. And these are different types of rockers in the footwear. Then you can have a stress relief pad. You can have an ulcer like this. You can have adhesive felt, 7 to 8 millimeters, and then patient can walk. You can have a metatarsal pad. You can have a toe bars to prevent the pressure. Or you can have a stress relief pad depending on the site of the ulcer. So variety of things can be done. These are variety of models to reduce the pressure. If your foot is hyperpronating, you can put an anti-pronation pad in the insole, so the foot does not hyperpronate. And the foot should lie in the footwear like this, not this. That should be adequate width to the footwear. This is a normal wear and tear, so this shows that there is a normal biomechanics. And wearing the socks is very important, because socks prevent the forward rolling movement and it's a protection between the foot and the footwear. See, normally the size of the foot never increases. It is the collapse of the arch which gives the impression of the increased size, but the pressure point changes as the arch goes on collapsing, and that's why you need to have an adequate space in the footwear. You can have a Sharpo foot kit, like a, you know, felt pad, and patient can still be walking. You have thermoplastic splints which can correct the toe deformities. These are a variety of footwears which we use. This is for heel wedge. Then if you have poor patient who cannot afford anything, you take two simple inserts of microcellular rubber which will cost about 50 rupees. Ask him to stand on one and you make a cutout and stick it over this, and you still offloading the ulcer. You need to remember that if you remove the first toe, the second toe will start migrating, because what keeps the toes in anatomical position is the adjoining toe and small muscles which are gone in this patient. So either you need to give a filler or you need to give a toe prosthesis, which are available in India now. These are the pads which can protect the prominent metatarsal head, and a Sharpo foot, you can make a footwear like this. This is for the front wedge, this is for the central midfoot also. The last point is that Hawaii slippers, very popular, very cheap, but most dangerous for the diabetic patient. You can see the patient is sitting. The moment he stands and starts walking, because of the intrinsic muscle weakness, he is holding it so tightly that either he will get a web space injury or he will get an early toe deformity. So this needs to be discouraged. This is a Sharpo walker. A foot like this always does not need an amputation. You can still give him an AFO and make him walk. So I think we need to see that every deformity does not need amputation. And these are the various prescriptions for a category of the footwear, from depending upon the neuropathy. And I think I'll just run through this. You need to do everything and then decide about the footwear. Variety of neuropathy, you need to assess the neuropathy and do that in category 6. And you need to have a preventive diabetic foot clinic, and that needs to be run by, not by doctors, but by the paramedics and diabetes educators. And these are clinics which are started with WDF and Diabetic Foot Society of India in Chennai, Ahmedabad, Calcutta and Guwahati, which is managed by paramedics. It's a teamwork, but the point I would like to stress, patient is the most important member of the team. Unless he is willing to get his foot saved, no foot can be saved. An adequate and proper understanding of diabetic peripheral neuropathy is essential for successful diabetic foot surgery and salvage of foot. Foot is a masterpiece of engineering work of art. That is a very famous saying by Leonardo da Vinci. We need to do that. We need a training and we need to create a cadre. Our institute has a lot of courses, lot of training courses and observers for paramedics, doctors, surgeons, everybody. These are some of the books published by Diabetic Foot Society of India. And the three messages I want to give as a take-home message is, this is a St. Vincent's Declaration in 1998. And this was 2005 World Diabetes Day. We have passed all that long time back. And if you want to achieve their goals, the minimum we should do is don't allow the patient to walk on the foot ulcer. They literally walk to death. And I think minimum if we do that, we will achieve the goals of that. And early detection and protection of high pressure area of the foot and corrective footwear is the only solution to prevent the loss of limb. It is not technology, not vascular surgery. That is all is there, but that itself cannot reduce the higher level amputation. And I would like to end by showing you a very famous Sanskrit saying which says, one who walks his fortune marches ahead. I think those 70 million patients, we want their fortunes to march ahead, so we need to preserve their feet. And that is possible in India because we have tradition of foot care and footwear in our culture. We need to remember that and re-inculcate in our medical students and patients. Thanks.
Thank you, sir, for that inspiring talk on footwear. Sir has reminded us that without proper footwear prescription, the podiatric or the diabetic foot care is completely, will become very bad.